And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. On tonight's episode, we visit Northern Ireland, the site of so much violence in the past. But now the people seem tired of it, and the phrase we heard many times in Belfast was, there's no going back on the peace process. This first segment takes place at the Bombay Street Memorial. This was the site of riots in August of 1969, where Catholic-owned homes were burned by loyalists. Our friend Sean Murray gives us some background. So, Sean, you'll explain this? Okay.
Well, this is a memorial garden dedicated to the IRA volunteers, IRA members who've died since the 1920s in this particular area. This area is very significant. In terms of the modern troubles, 1969, we have this area is specifically important because of what happened here in 1969. If you could just look at these sort of newish houses here to my right, you can see that they're different from these brown type houses, and the reasons for that was that these houses were burnt to the ground in 1969, whereas you had across the wall here was the mainly Protestant Shankill Road area, and this comes off the mainly Catholic Nationalist Falls Road area. So this area, Clonard, is connected to the large Clonard Monastery here, and what you had in 1969 was through Protestant paranoia, working class Protestants being whipped up through fear of the civil rights marches that were happening at the time. They attacked this area and burnt these houses to the ground. They tried to burn the church to the ground, the large chapel to the ground, but the area was defended. Now, what happened here in 1969 was that, in general, the IRA were more or less finished. From the 1950s, the border campaign had sort of failed, and the IRA were sort of, you know, a mainly underground organisation which wasn't really working anymore. You know, it wasn't happening anymore for the IRA, and it was sort of a defeatist attitude within the IRA. But when people here had to arm themselves, rearm themselves after being attacked and burnt out of their houses, there was a reorganisation of the IRA, and out of that came the Provisional IRA. So this is the reason why this area in general is particularly important. Sort of the modern troubles, if you like, sort of emanated from this area. And the local IRA company here, C Company, and the symbol is a phoenix. And that's particularly, the reasons for that was that, you know, the phoenix rising from the ashes, out of the ashes of the burning houses of Bombay Street, you know. So in 1969, you had young Jordan McCauley. He was defending the area. He was a young IRA volunteer. He was killed while defending the area. And there you have it. But this area has always been important. I mean, in 1942, you had a shooting here, just behind this house, actually, here. You had a shooting where an RUC constable was shot dead, actually, in Cashmere Road here. And the young IRA volunteer, only 19 years old, Tom Williams, he was hung on the 2nd of September 1942. He was the last IRA member to be hung by the British in Ireland. So he was also from this area. This area has always, because of its proximity to the mainly loyalist Shankill Road, it's always been a very, very Republican area, you know. So, and now you have it. The symbol of this divide now is a large wall, which you see just on my right hand side here, you know.
What's on the other side of that wall?
Look, on the other side of this wall is mainly Protestant area, the Shankill Road, which is a staunch Protestant area. And from when I was a child in the late 1970s, this was a row of houses which were there behind these houses, which were burnt, and they're always there, before the wall went up. The wall was never there. I mean, the walls have continually grown from the 1970s. You can actually before walk down this road onto the Shankill Road, but after 1969 that was finished. The people were completely and utterly segregated, you know.
And this was always the boundary before there was a wall, Protestant, and one.
It was an invisible boundary, if you know what I mean. The sort of Protestant houses stopped there and the Catholic houses started here. There was always an invisible boundary, but now you see it. It's quite explicit now, you know.
Was there anything in particular that led to that attack in 1969, any particular bit of propaganda that might have made them especially paranoid?
Well, I don't want to go, you know, too far back. I don't want to give you a whole, you know, history lesson at the minute, but mainly what had happened after the Industrial Revolution, you had, Belfast was a major, it was a, major industrial city within Britain, Ireland in general, if you want to call it. But what happened was that they needed cheap jobs. You had these mills, which are still here, these mills and factories, which needed workforce. So you had, you know, a large Catholic population coming into the city because of the cheap labour, and they came into the city to work in the mills. So then the explosion, the population explosion in Belfast sort of started evening itself up with a lot of Catholics coming into Belfast. There was always tension. I mean, you had riots from, you know, the early 1800s, basically, right up. I mean, Belfast was always a volatile situation, you know, after the Industrial Revolution. But, I mean, what happened was after partition in 1921, just things got gradually worse. And the fiery temperament of, I would say, elitist Protestant organisations, because this after 1921, this state was sort of formed as a Protestant state for the Protestant people, and Catholics weren't wanted, you know. So what you had was, to keep that status quo of Protestant power, they always had to whip up the working class Protestants, always enforcing a paranoia amongst the working class population. I mean, the working class Protestant population were just as poor as the Catholic population, but yet they're the most patriotic to the Queen, who had all the privileges, but yet because of republicanism, we could see through that, if you know what I mean. But this paranoia was always there because of the elitist, always needed the working class to fight the wars, to do the killings, to go to the jails. Well, they never. They just had to open their mouths and you know, give that fiery temperament to always rouse things up and keep the Catholic working class, you know, down. So that's where you have it. And it just exploded in 1969.
It's a pretty familiar tactic, though, isn't it?
Well, it's a familiar tactic all around the world, isn't it? We're seeing it now, you know. We're seeing it in Syria at the moment. We see it, you know, all around the Arab Spring, you know. So it always has been, but the old British adage of divide and conquer, yeah.
You think this will hold now?
As in the peace process? Yeah, there's no going back. It definitely will hold. I mean, what you see at the minute, you see there's been several rats in Belfast and the six counties over the last number of months from last December. What you have is you have a cultural balance happening now. You have a situation where we see this still going on. You have the elitist politicians within the Protestant community can't handle a sort of a parity of esteem now. So they need to emanate this old cultural diversity through marches and through everything else. And there's still this mentality that the Catholics have to keep down. But, you know, through education this last number of years, and, you know, the likes of the criminal justice system has been balanced through, you know, an even Catholic Protestant situation, that those days are gone now. You know, I mean, Catholics are entitled to the same as what Protestants are entitled to, but just some people just can't get it around their heads. And you have the likes of the Orange Institution, where these old people, these old puppets, still think that they're living in the 1920s and 1830s, and it's emanating with a few rats here and there, but it eventually will come around. That, you know, part of esteem doesn't hurt anyone. It's there for everyone, you know.
Do you see a change in the young people? Do they talk to each other across the divide? And are they rejecting all the things of the past, like the Orange group living in the 1920s?
Well, you see, within the more working class you go, the poorer the areas, it always has to manifest itself in something. I mean, if it wasn't religious politics here in Ireland, if it was in England, it'd be manifested in something else. It's just that we have this, you know, this religion thing here, you know. So it will always, the poor areas will always manifest itself. One side republicanism, and it'll manifest itself in, you know, in violent unionism. We can't get away from that. So that's why there's always an eagerness to, you know, to try and get as much economic development here as possible, because it's very, very important that young people see a different way. I mean, sectarianism needs to be removed from society. It's a blight on society, just as racism was in America so long ago, and still is to this day. We just see, you know, seen the case lately in Florida with that
Trayvon Martin,
yeah.
Anything else you'd like to show us here? It's an amazing monument.
Well, here we have, these are all the IRA members that have been killed from the 1920s. And if you just look up here, on the right hand side, the top one, Don McCann, that's an uncle of mine. He was killed in Gibraltar. Three IRA members went to Gibraltar, and Gibraltar's just a spitz. It's been on the headlines in the last couple of weeks because of Spain starting to up the ante on Britain over Gibraltar, you know.
Interesting, isn't it, that's suddenly happening.
It is very interesting, you know, but they're sort of trying to tie them with the Falklands and stuff like that, you know, but I think it's long overdue, to be quite truthful, you know. But in March 1988, they had gone to Gibraltar to bomb a British parade that was happening in Gibraltar at the time. They hadn't put the device into the actual Gibraltar at that time, but were executed on the way out on a sort of a dummy mission at the time, you know. So these three are very, very iconic people within Belfast and Ireland in general through republicanism, you know.
So now he was killed in Gibraltar.
Yeah, he was shot dead. He was executed in Gibraltar. Yeah.
And was this one of the people you were trying to bring back?
Well,
from Gibraltar.
Well, yes. There was a major operation in trying to get the bodies back after they were executed. I mean, the bodies were abused, etc., while they were in Gibraltar. No airplane carriers were allowed to take the bodies away, so it was a crazy situation. Even after they were dead, they still hadn't got, you know, even there wasn't respect given even in death to the bodies. So, I mean, I made a documentary about this, which was released in March, just looking back, which is the 25th anniversary in March. So it's a major, the three are very important figures within modern republicanism.
And where does that stand now? As far as bringing the bodies back, were you successful?
Yes, the bodies were brought home. The bodies were brought home the 14th. Eight days later, the bodies eventually got home. But there's a big story behind bringing the bodies home and a large campaign to get the bodies home, you know, at the time. But it was a very, very traumatic period at that time, because not only after the bodies were brought home, not only was we had the whole episode of Gibraltar, but you had a situation where at the funeral, mourners at the funeral were attacked with grenades and a gun by a guy called Michael Stone, and three other people were killed at their funeral. And during those 14 days, there were over a dozen people killed. So it was a real turbulent period of the Troubles in 1988, a very, very significant period, you know.
Mm-hmm. What else is around here? All the names there, those all the pictures.
Well, all these names you see now are all IRA dead, going back right to Pat Duffin and Dan Duffin in 1921. They were murdered just across the street here by a paramilitary gang. The leader actually was a guy called PC Nixon, and he just worked out of Springfield Barracks here on the Springfield Road, where they had a murder squad which just left Springfield Road, a local barracks here, and just went out and killed who they thought might have been Republicans at the time. And the interesting thing, you've heard of Michael Collins, have you? IRA leader from the turn of the century. Well, Michael Collins, he had aroused suspicion of this guy Nixon because of a murder squad. And Michael Collins was the head of intelligence in the IRA and had sent a company up to disperse of this leader, Nixon. So it was a lot of history. I mean, from the turn of the century, even before this area is immersed in history, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, we see these grids at the back of the houses here, these metal grids. They're still on to this day, and it keeps getting raised because you have attacks from the area over, you know, like some petrol bombs and stuff like that, so they need to have metal grids to save anything getting into the houses, you know, petrol bombs and stuff like that.
Do they still need that?
Oh, yeah. They still need that, yeah.
But people still throw petrol bombs?
Yeah. Why? Yeah.
Do you think those days are near an end?
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, we can get pessimistic about the whole thing, but if rewind 10 years, rewind 20 years, we've definitely moved on. It's progressively got better, so you have to be optimistic.
What do you think has been learned from all this that maybe can be applied to other conflicts in other parts of the world?
Talking to your enemy. I mean, that's the most important thing, is that you just need a bit of breathing space, you know, a bit of breathing space. And obviously it helps to have, you know, intermediaries from other countries and stuff like that, but you need to talk.
That seems to be the one thing that they don't do. The United States hasn't talked to North Korea or Cuba. Basically, rebel groups and governments just fight each other but don't actually have a dialogue. It seems so simple. Why do you think it's so hard?
Well, I'll be quite honest with you. I think the reasons for that is the United States feels superior to these countries, and they won't talk on an equal level to these countries when they should be talking on an equal level.
And that's what happened here, too, with the UK government.
That's exactly it. The UK government realised at some stage that they weren't superior over the IRA, and this was going to be a long, long war, and that they had to go to the table with the IRA.
Well, What was the final death toll of the entire conflict? Has that even been counted?
There's over 3,000 victims from, I know that's from 1969 anyhow, you know.
Mm-hmm. But since then, there have been quite a number too.
No, not as much. Over the last number of years, it's been sporadic, but it hasn't. Not as much political. It's been a spillover from, you know, maybe personalities who've been involved in politics before who've went the criminal way, you know, mm-hmm. but not through politics.
Interesting. Not to minimize this in any way, but in comparison to other conflicts in other parts of, we've seen 1,000 people die in the Middle East in the last few days. What do you think it is about this conflict that draws such attention and captivates the world so much?
Two things. First of all, it's in Western Europe, okay? And the other thing is we have a very small population. It may be over 3,000 people, but you apply that to America and you're talking, you know, a lot of people, hundreds of thousands of people.
Amazing. Extremely educational, inspirational. Is there anything else that that should be pointed out here?
Well, I think I don't know, Sean will show you the church, because it's very significant, because this is where the peace talks actually began. Uh-huh. The first peace talks started between moderate nationalists and sort of, you know, militant nationalists, started in this church here. You know, so the peace process started here. Modern war, if you like, started here, and the peace process started in this area also.
Just a few feet away?
Just a few feet away, that's right, yeah.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Sean Murray's documentary on the Gibraltar 3 is titled The Long Journey Home and can be seen on seanmurray.tv. Our next segment features one of our Belfast listeners, also named Sean, who gives us a little driving tour of some of the most interesting Belfast landmarks. We move from the Catholic side to the Protestant side of town and learn a whole lot about some of the differences that exist in such a closely connected area. So this is the monastery where the peace process happened.
Yeah, essentially, yes. This is where elements within the SDLP, which is the Socialist Labour and Democratic Party, engaged with republicanism, and through a course of a number of years, this is the peace process essentially arose out of the conversations that took place within this building. Yeah, and it was also, you know, you had the input from several priests who maybe went beyond the their own calling and helped to foster an attitude of trust and dialogue. Yeah. drive out into Clonard Street. And the thing about Belfast is almost every street has a story. Some really tragic stories. Clonard Street's no different. And lots of people have lost their lives in this street. You know, it just looks like every other street at the minute, you know, cars coming up and down, people going about their daily lives, but it wasn't always like that.
What's a typical incident that would happen that would cost people their lives here?
Just behind us and to our left, there's new houses. That a premature bomb went off there, and several people lost their lives. There's been numerous shootings up and down this street, and British soldiers have lost their lives on it, along with IRA people. So, there's every street. This street that we're pulling into now, Sevastopol Street. You know, if you look, so this is a Carnegie Library on the left, okay, and it's facing the Bobby Sands Memorial. Well, if you look, you'll see that the wall's kind of damaged on the left here. There's a large bomb put here, and it was parked the wrong way around. The blast was intended to hit this building, but instead hit this one. So that's why the wall's slightly damaged, and you can actually see where there's new brick.
This is the Bobby Sands Memorial here?
Yes. Well, it's a mural, quite an iconic mural, that's known the world over. And if you actually look at it, rather than the mural of Bobby Sands, the words on it are quite potent. You know, our revenge will be the laughter of our children. It's not about violence, you know. It's about building a community where people can live and children are happy. Where we can all live in peace and happiness and prosperity.
Tell us something about who Bobby Sands was.
Bobby Sands was a hunger striker who took part in the second hunger strike. And
was he the first?
No, there was a hunger strike before it that was called off. And there's a lot of history behind it. But when the second hunger strike was undertaken, Bobby Sands had no doubt that he would have to die, and they died for five demands, you know, such as not wearing a prison uniform, wearing their own clothes, and they went through the hunger strike, and Bobby Sands wrote a series of he wrote a diary, and there's no doubt that anybody who reads it, takes the time to read it, will see that Bobby Sands was 100% committed to what he believed in, but knew that he would have to die. And 10 men died in, you know, through the course of 1981. And eventually, like a lot of stuff, the government did cave in, but they save face, they wouldn't cave in, and 10 men died. But the five demands were, well, most of them were were given over.
I remember reading about this. Every person's death would be marked by women coming out of their homes banging on pots.
Well, not so much bin, you know, like a trash can. So in Belfast, they used to have metal steel bins. So the women would come out and bang those, you know. But not only that, it was kind of an early warning system when the British Army came into areas as well, that people would bang bin lids so that people would know that the British Army were here. But yeah, there's quite a lot of footage in terms of the hunger strikes and people banging these bin lids. I guess it's just a sign of protest, given what limited materials people had.
We're pulled up right in front of a bunch of murals on the wall, but unfortunately a tour bus has just pulled up next to us, and they're staring at it for a little while now. Well, we can wait for the tour bus to pass by, but there's a whole wall filled with murals. Maybe this is a good opportunity to tell us how the murals got started in the first place and who makes them.
Okay, so the murals are drawn by several people. So we have local artists, one of them. Well, actually, you can see them there. Danny Devaney. Believe it or not, there's a picture of him there. Well, that's him quite young. So Danny Devaney would do a lot of this painting. And you'll see it's a kind of a solidarity wall. It's known locally as the International Wall, but it's about solidarity with other struggles. You'll see some stuff. 3 to 5 relates to Cuban or stuff that's happening in Cuba, but you'll see stuff relating to Palestine. You also have a painting here which needs a little touch up of Picasso's, just over here on the wall. You'll see also a depiction here of an attack on an IRA funeral that happened. And, you know, this is really it. It's done by local people. And it's quite an iconic wall. What happens is every few years it's redone. And, you know, they did have a really excellent one. I'm sure you can find it on Google, of Bush essentially sucking the oil out of Iraq. You know, it's quite an iconic picture.
Well, I'm just looking at a bunch of them here. Oppression breeds resistance, and we see a picture of demonstrators, women walking up to a soldier, holding signs that say "Free Marion Price," and there's reference to Falls Curfew, July 1970, dedicated to all those women who faced up to military aggression. And underneath it says, "Resistance brings freedom." Who was Marion Price?
Well, this is kind of a recent story. Marion Price was a Republican prisoner. She was released under the Good Friday Agreement. Had served her time. However, she gave a talk. Was present at a meeting where a statement was read out on behalf of another organization disconnected with the peace process. And in doing so, the British government took a decision that she needed to be essentially taken off the streets. And that's what they did. And she was interned for the best part of 2-3 years. And this is where you see the Free Marion Price, because everybody understands it was a form of internment that she faced.
And then I see something that almost looks like an advertisement for West Belfast Taxi Association, 40 years unbroken service. But there's another iconic picture of soldiers, people with guns. Get the real story, local history from local people. Take a black taxi tour.
Yeah, well, the black taxis you might normally associate with places like London, because they are London taxis. But what happened was that when the kind of civil unrest broke out here, the public transport, for one reason or another, wouldn't service these areas. Okay, so what local people did was they went to England and they bought London taxis, London black taxis. And for the past 40 years, it's been local people driving up and down fixed routes, moving the local population in and out of the city centre. So it's a real community-based organisation, and it's essentially run by the community for the community. So yeah, for 40 years, these black taxis, which you would normally associate with London, have been coming up and down the Falls Road.
That's incredible and very ingenious as well. There's other murals here, some, like you mentioned, focusing on other events going on throughout the world. For instance, Free the Five, five Cuban patriots unjustly imprisoned in political show trials in Miami in 2001. But that case has gotten some publicity in the United States, not nearly enough, obviously. But there are all kinds of other global struggles that are focused on these murals in various places. I think Palestinians in one area.
Yeah, just behind us here, it talks about the Israeli administrative detention. That there's 310 prisoners within this detention.
4,400. Hang on, there's a truck. Oh, this way, and there's a bus after that. It's a kind of a popular area. So as soon as that passes, we'll be able to read that sign. Okay, just about ready. 4,400 Palestinian political prisoners, 310 administrative detention, no to Israeli administrative detention. And then next to that, end British internment of Irish Republicans 2013. Now, what's that a reference to? Are there still IRA members in prison?
No, not IRA members. And well, let me just clarify this. They will refer to themselves as the IRA, but you need to distinguish between the Provisional IRA, which signed up to the peace process and is involved in the peace process, and subsequently essentially went away and 2005. You then have some other elements that may have been connected to the Provisional IRA or may just be involved in criminality who have essentially latched on to the name IRA. But the internment, there's no doubt that there are cases where people who are a fly in the ointment, they're just taken off the streets and held on remand on basically bumped up charges, you know. And usually they're released about, you know, 2 or 3 years later. But as I said, it's a form of internment.
When the war is over, is ended, the stories, the tales, the actions of, how do you pronounce that?
Oglan na Haran.
Will be written...
A large.
And in my country we go to prison first and then become president. Nelson Mandela, freedom lover. Support Republican socialist political prisoners.
Yeah.
IRSP.ie. In memory of the Belfast men who fought against fascism with the 15th International Brigade, Spanish Civil War, 1936-1939. There's so many.
Yeah.
I see end. Sectarianism, bring down the walls. What walls are they referring to?
These walls were just going to pass through. So this is the interface between the Falls Road and the Shankill Road. Okay, so we're going to pass through a set of security gates that are locked.
Hang on, climate change affects everyone, but not equally. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yes. A few more here. Frederick Douglass. Yeah. So this is almost like an airlock here.
Yeah, International Day of Peace. Imagine peace every day, and we're going through a barrier.
Yeah.
And now, where are we now?
This is a loyalist area now.
In the Protestant section?
Yes. And we're about to go on the Shankill Road.
You said there was a distinction between the murals on the Protestant side and the ones on the Catholic side?
Well, it's been noted that the murals on the Protestant side seem to be drawn with straight lines. And I'm just kind of repeating what's been in the press. They seem to be drawn with straight lines. They don't seem to be free-flowing. And they seem to be in praise of the royal family. And obviously, when we're coming into working-class areas, I find it puzzling how people can praise, you know, upper-class English people who really couldn't care about them.
This is amazing. We've just gone a couple of blocks, but right now there's British flags everywhere, all throughout this street, and that's not something we would have seen only a couple of blocks away.
No. And you have to remember, this is the summer, but you also see British flags, but you also see paramilitary flags. So here we have the Ulster Volunteer Force. This is our flag, which is, you will see quite often on the Shankill Road. This is what these are the people who live here. This is the community that the UVF come from, and you know, this is a manifestation of their culture.
So now, technically, we discussed this earlier, we are not in Ireland right now, we are in the United Kingdom.
Legally, this is a different jurisdiction, okay? So this is part of the United Kingdom, if we're talking legally. However, it's not very straightforward. People, while they're quite happy to use the name United Kingdom, Catholics in general believe that this is part of Ireland. But there's an acceptance that, you know, as long as the majority of the people within Northern Ireland want it to be part of the United Kingdom, then it will remain so. And that was agreed. And because that's the way it's going to be until the majority say otherwise.
But to refer to yourself as being Irish here would not be a good idea in the Protestant section.
No, you might have a problem. I would hope we go into a situation where this doesn't become a problem, but it is a problem at the minute. My name's Sean. If I identify myself on this road as Sean, that automatically marks me out as being a Catholic, which is something I really don't want to do. Just not right now. I would hope that we move on and we move past that, you know.
But to our right, we can see loyalist murals. Yeah, the People's Army, 1912 to 2002, 90 years of resistance. And we can see this is a mural dedicated to UVF people. And we can see this individual on the right was quite an instrumental politician in terms of the current peace process. This is David Irvine, and he, you know, essentially moved the UVF to a more political footing and more into politics. Unfortunately, he died of natural causes, and you know, there doesn't seem to be anybody there to fill that gap, you know. And instead of, you know, I would like to see murals that celebrate a Protestant culture. Instead, we have murals that celebrate people with guns, which is never good. It's a bit violent, and we don't really want to see people like that, you know. But we should be celebrating the British culture here, and people being proud of it, which they are. But from my point of view, this is quite intimidating.
I see a massive fence up ahead. Is that the boundary?
Well, let's go down and have a look.
So this is going to be the other side of the wall from the Memorial Garden, the IRA Memorial Garden. So this is the other side of it.
So you were talking about houses being attacked and why they needed cages. Well, this is where the attacks come from. And just to clarify, attacks come from both sides. So you'll see that there's no houses built directly on the other side of the wall, because unfortunately there are some people who think that, you know, it's a good thing to throw petrol bombs over a wall. There's a victim somewhere over there, but they're never gonna chase you. They're never gonna come after you. And if you like, it's an easy way to vent your sectarianism.
I imagine there's CCTV everywhere, though.
No, not really. Not down here. No.
Why not? If people are going to throw petrol bombs, wouldn't they want to see who did that?
Yes, but it's an accepted norm. So you can see, just see the top of the cages on the houses below the wall. No, but we'll see it more up close. But no, there is no CCTV.
Wow. When would you say the last time somebody threw a petrol bomb was?
If it's not a petrol bomb, it'll be a large rock. You know, and petrol bombs, you know, I don't know, I don't live that, you know, me personally, I don't live there. But I'm sure, you know, man, it's a regular occurrence. It'll be back and forth. If it's, you know, people even play golf, believe it or not. People would take a golf and have maybe 10 golf balls and see if they can get them over the wall. And where it lands, nobody knows.
So when we were standing at that memorial just now, we could have been clocked in the head with a golf ball.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at the time.
To be honest, a golf ball is pretty small. What you don't want to be hit in the head with is a large rock or a ball.
Well, yeah, whatever they chose to throw over at the moment, or a petrol bomb or whatnot.
It's also important that rocks come from both sides, you know.
So now, we're still on the Protestant side now.
Yeah, this is the Shankill Road. This is the main thoroughfare.
I see buses and mass transit. Do they go from one side to the other, or do they strictly stay on one side of the wall?
Well, in West Belfast, they generally stay on the one side of the wall. However, this part of Shankill is in West Belfast, but it then goes up into North Belfast. And you do have some, very little, I must say, interaction between the communities. So you get the... quite an amazing thing where you have a bus stop here and maybe a bus stop 200 yards up the road, but this is the Catholic bus stop and that's the Protestant bus stop.
How uncomfortable are you right now being in this part of town?
I'm okay. You know, I'm okay. I feel a bit intimidated when I see murals of people with weapons and glorifying violence, you know. And it doesn't matter if it's a paramilitary group or the British Army. Violence is never good, no matter who does it. Whether that's Republicans, Loyalists, or the state. And we need to move past that, you know, and I really wish we could do it faster, but history's history, and we just have to wait for it sometimes.
Are you optimistic that's the prevailing mood in both sides?
Yes, I think so. There's no going back. You know, and as we discussed earlier on, that, you know, post 9/11, you know, the where's it going to go? Ireland isn't, or Belfast isn't, doesn't, there's no more room for violence.
You know, the IRA did count on a lot of support from America. That was never going to be there anymore. And whether the IRA would like to admit it or not, 9/11 did put a chill in effect in terms of armed resistance.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. 9/11 happened, and you say that once those attacks occurred, there was a significant change in the struggle over here.
Yes, because, well, the change was already underway, so I don't want to overestimate the impact, but it really, and it's, I want to try and sound respectful, it has the attacks on 9/11 did have a positive impact in the Northern peace process, because it reaffirmed what people had already said, that you need to move away from violence. There's no more room for it. The core issues, while they weren't all solved, could be resolved slowly by talking, and there was no need to indulge in violence anymore.
So it sounds like here they took an opportunity from a horrible event to turn it into something a bit more positive, something that we had the same opportunity in the States and we went the other direction.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's an opportunity. It may have been an opportunity that was thrust upon you, but that's the way it played out.
Right at this intersection, you'll see on one side there's lots of British flags. So if you just look here.
Right.
Okay. There's a reason why all these flags are here at the minute, and that's because a parade that is normally allowed to march through this roundabout and shoot up this road for about 300 yards. That's a Catholic area, and the parade was stopped. So there's been quite a lot of rioting and stuff that's been going on around here. And you can see this is the local people here who feel that their civil rights are being undermined.
They looked a bit angry.
Yeah, well, they might be a bit angry because they don't know us.
They're angry at us.
Well, I don't know. Let's hope they don't throw anything through the window. No, I'm only joking. I'm sure the people who are on the protest are feel as strongly as a Catholic or Republican may feel about their civil rights. But there's another school of thought that says that, you know, there's a balance that's coming in terms of civil rights and opportunities, and that's a bit of a change for upper class Protestants, who are quite happy to see the lower classes fight their wars for them, or fight or be on the streets and go to jail for what they believe in. And I guess if we do some scholarly research, you'll see that there's a formal process called naturalization, where the ideas and the ideological interests of the upper class are translated down to the lower classes through media, through commentators who pursue that line of thinking. And of course these people get their information from the mass media and from their own community, and you know, if that's what they're being told, that's what they're going to believe, unfortunately.
Fascinating. Now, you, what part of Belfast is this?
This is North Belfast.
North Belfast.
This is where quite a lot of trouble happens, and this is quite a potent area at the minute.
Yeah, those people standing on the road, they can't just share a beer with them or something?
No. Well, I can. Unfortunately, these people can. Right? So there's a Catholic bus stop, just like I was saying, and there's a bus coming down, but that bus will be full of Protestants.
How can you tell that?
Because this is a Protestant area that we're about to go into.
But that's a Catholic bus stop.
Yeah, because this is a Catholic area. Protestants don't come down here. Catholics don't go up here.
How long do you think this is going to continue for?
Well, for the immediate future anyway. You know, it's really, really sad. So here's a bus stop here. This is the Protestant bus stop, just here. So you will see the Protestants get on a bus here, the bus will go down a few hundred yards, and Catholics will get on the bus, and they'll sit in different seats, and they won't talk to each other.
But you can't tell the difference by looking at them, can you? At least in the States, we basically discriminate based on color of skin and things that it's easy for us to tell the difference. Here, everyone looks like they're from the same background, because they really are.
Exactly, they really are, but there's subtle differences that, as maybe as an outsider, that you don't you don't pick up on, but you'll notice if you're talking to someone how they pronounce words. Okay, so I might say the letter H, as you would say, as H. Right, so if I say H, that automatically that's me. I'm a Catholic.
Okay, that bald guy right there walking up the street, Catholic or Protestant?
Protestant.
Protestant. He's Protestant. How do you know?
Because this is a Protestant area.
Oh, maybe he's lost. How about her crossing the street? She's Protestant?
Protestant, yeah.
This woman next to us in the car is staring at us.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'll wind in the window and find out.
What are some of the little things that you can look at? Not that I want to know, but I'm curious.
Well, sports shirts are quite a good indicator, and I'm sure you'll see them. So we talked about Scottish sectarianism and the rivalry between Celtic and Rangers. Well, it's the exact same rivalry here. People here wore Celtic tops or wore Rangers football tops, and that identifies you as one or the other. People here will wear rugby shirts, or people here will wear Irish football GAA shirts, and again they identify you with one side of the community or the other.
How do the Jews get on?
They get a pretty easy time.
And I haven't seen any black people. I don't have, obviously not African American, African Irish. Oh my God! Right, that's the first black person I've seen in Ireland. Wow. Okay.
Well, in Belfast, yeah. I don't know why that is. It's just multiculturalism is slow to come to Belfast.
But is there racism towards other races outside of the Protestant and Catholic?
I guess so, but it's no more widespread than anywhere else in the world. You know, there are just some stupid people. What do you do about that? I don't know. You know, if people aren't willing to be educated and see, only see through things through the kind of the prism of we are the white people and we are superior. Well, I don't know what you do with those type of people, but they you know, I mean, there in all Western Europe and as you pointed out, in the States as well.
Well, stupid people tend to be at the heart of it all, and we have our share of them certainly in the States as well. So I guess we can only hope that there are less stupid people in the future. Do you think the kids today are learning more?
Well, I would like to think so. Unfortunately, and this is really unfortunately, we have a conservative government who seems intent on restricting university education to people who have the money to attend. Now, I know you have to pay for schooling in the United States, but that wasn't always the case here, where people, if they attained the grades, they could get to university and it wouldn't cost them anything. You know, it was a right that the state would give you all the opportunities if you could meet the grades, and you weren't discriminated upon or based upon your financial income. Unfortunately, now it's the average fee is somewhere between £6,000 and £9,000 a year to go to university. So if you come out of university with an honours degree, over the 3 or 4 years, you're maybe £30,000 in debt before you even, kick off. So, you know, I'd like to think that people had all the opportunities to fulfil their educational needs, but unfortunately, the Conservative government in London seem to have the view that it should be restricted to people of the right type of people who have money.
Well, Sean, I want to thank you. This has been really captivating and interesting. And despite the unpleasantness that we focus on, I don't want to give the wrong impression of Belfast. Belfast is a really amazing city, so much to see, so much history to learn from, and we can be inspired by the progress that has been made here. And I just hope it continues to move in a positive direction, and you certainly seem to encapsulate that yourself as far as treating everybody fairly and listening to different perspectives.
Yeah, well, I think it's important that you see the reality of Belfast. Belfast has moved on an awful lot, and it's just like any other city with its problems, but also there, you know, for me anyway, maybe I am a little bit biased, Belfast is a really, really nice place to live. If we can sort out our own internal problems, our own kind of parochial interests, then Belfast is a really great place to be. And I'm careful, you know, you don't want to believe too much of your own propaganda, but it isn't. And I think you as you go away, Emmanuel, you'll see that Belfast is really like any other city, but, you know, there's a lot of history. It's a vibrant city, and you've only saw a small fraction, unfortunately, a small fraction of it. But yeah, it's somewhere nice to live.
Well, I'm glad I came here, and I'm sure I'll visit again very soon.
I look forward to seeing you.
My song for you this evening, it's not to make you sad, nor for adding to your sorrows in this troubled northern land. But lately I've been thinking, and it just won't leave my mind. I tell you of two friends one time, they were both good friends of mine. Alan Bell from Baynham, he lived just across the fields. He was a great man for the music, for the dancing and the reels. Oh, Mary came from South Armagh to court young Alice Fair, and we'd often meet on the Ryan Road, and the laughter filled the air. There were roses, roses, and the tears of the people ran together. Oh, Alan, he was Protestant, and John was Catholic born. Oh, it never made a difference, for their friendship it was strong. Sometimes in the evening, when we heard the sound of drums, we said it won't divide us, we will always be as one. For the ground our fathers ploughed in, the soil it is the same, and the places where we say our prayers have just got different names. We talked about the friends who died, and we hoped there'd be no more. It's little then we realize the tragedy in store. There were roses, roses, and the tears of the people ran together. It was on a Sunday morning when the awful news came round. Another killing had been done just outside Newrytown. Well, we knew that Alan danced up there. We knew he liked the band. But when we heard that he was dead, we just could not understand. We gathered at the graveside on the cold and rainy day, and the minister, he closed his eyes and prayed for no revenge. And all the ones who knew him from along the Ryan Road, they bowed their heads and said a prayer for the resting of his soul. There were roses, roses, and the tears of the people ran together. Well, fear it filled the countryside, there was fear in every home. When the car of death came crawling round the lonely Ryan Road, a Catholic will be killed tonight just to even up the score. Oh Christ, it's young O'Malley, could they've taken from the door. Alan was my friend, he cried. He begged them in his fear. But centuries of hatred are fears that cannot hear. An eye for an eye was all that filled their minds. And another eye for another eye, until everyone is blind. There were roses, roses, and the tears of people ran together. I don't know where the moral is, or where this song should end, but I wonder just how many wars are fought between good friends. And those who give the order, they're not the ones to die. It's Bell and O'Malley and the likes of you and I.